All right, Jen Cooper, the Keeper, here for the next episode of the Mix Zone Women's Soccer Podcast. This is podcast number 95. And of course, in 1995, the second Women's World Cup was held. Sweden was the host. Norway beat Germany 2-0 in the final. It was also the first Women's World Cup, and I say that because FIFA didn't want the very first one held in 1991 to be referred to as the Women's World Cup, so it was the FIFA Women's World Championship for the M&M's Cup. So this was both the second World Championship tournament, and 95 was also the first Women's World Cup, but retroactively, we call them all the Women's World Cup. This was also the first Women's World Cup to have 45-minute halves. In 91, they just went 40 minutes. They didn't think women could handle it, which is kind of funny considering most of those players had always played 45-minute halves. 95 was also the smallest tournament in the history of the Women's World Cup in terms of attendance. Part of that was just how they planned to stage it. It was in Sweden. It was in pretty small tournaments. They weren't very ambitious in the planning of their promotion, unlike China, which... sure, there were 30, 60,000 in the stands sometimes, but the thought was those weren't necessarily paying customers. So total attendance for the 1995 tournament, around 112,000. Compare that to 4 years later when the U.S. hosting the tournament actually put significant marketing behind it. The final itself had 90,000 in attendance, more than 90,000, and they had sold before the tournament even kicked off. 4 months before the tournament kickoff, they had sold 200,000 tickets. So, lesson learned. See what a little marketing will do? Anyway, so this episode wraps up the NWSL previews, just in time for opening day this weekend. First chat is with Steph Young, the co-manager of StarsandStripesFC.com, and of course, longtime Boston Breakers fan. We talked about her favorite NWSL club, as well as the second U.S. match against Colombia, and what we're looking for from the historic fourth season of the NWSL. And batting cleanup for these previews is Courtney Andros of FinalThirdSoccer.com and also WOSO Off the Post. Courtney and I went over the Western New York Flash roster and talked about what veteran WOSO coach Paul Riley brings to the club. Note that I didn't do a preview of the Orlando Pride, but they will get a little extra coverage after the club's first few matches. All right, Jen Cooper here with Steph Young, co-manager of StarsandStripesFC.com, a great site to follow, especially if you're into Northeast soccer, but good coverage of U.S. soccer stuff as well, of course. And Steph, with the legal background, you know, she'll keep us up to date on all of the U.S. women's national team stuff. But we're going to talk actually on-field action. So, Steph, thanks for joining me today.
Hi, Jen.
So, U.S. women's game today, I can't believe it. We actually saw someone other than Hope Solo in goal. And she, I know, was one of your favorite keepers because she used to be a Boston Breaker. Let's talk about Alyssa Nair.
Alyssa Nair got like 3 touches on the ball in this game, but I don't friggin' care because I was so psyched to see her get a cap. And after the game, Jill Ellis gave press that essentially confirmed that she's number 2 on the depth chart now behind Hope Solo. So,
but of course she hasn't told us any reason like why Harris slipped or, I mean, I don't know if any coach would necessarily address that, but I think we had all kind of figured out that Nair had the edge.
Yeah, based on recent playing patterns. And then Ellis did say that Ashlyn came into this camp maybe with the flu or something. She got a slow start, so that could have influenced who got a cap in this set of friendlies and who didn't. But if you take this in conjunction with past caps and the way she's been treating Nair and Harris, I think it's obvious that she's kind of leapfrogged Harris in the pecking order.
And it is important to note, I think, that for the Olympics, where you've got 18 plus 4 alternates, you really do have to choose who's your number 2 versus your number 3. You know, last year it was assumed that Harris was the number 2, but it's not like Ellis had to decide because she was going to take three keepers. They're required to take 3 keepers. And, you know, we knew we weren't going to see anyone but Hope unless something drastic happened. So this is a different process for her, where obviously you have to choose who's actually in the 18 and which one's not.
Yeah, I mean, there's still time left to decide, and she has said she'll look at NWSL performance, and things have changed. Nair's no longer going to be the one who looks like a giant hero by comparison because of backline issues, because she's with a new NWSL team now. So if she continues to perform at the same perceived level with her new team, the Chicago Red Stars, oh God.
That's hard for you to say, I know.
I know. Then I think she'll solidify that number two spot. But if things kind of get iffy and Harris pulls away during NWSL, they don't have to submit that roster, I think, until 35 days or so before the actual Olympics.
And I think Harris has an interesting challenge ahead of her as well, being with an expansion club, you know, how well that defense is going to solidify. So I'm glad to hear that Ellis is considering the NWSL play and that we have a much longer stretch of games before that roster has to be decided, you know, for her to really judge these keepers by. You look back at last summer, you know, the World Cup started, what, June 6th. The rosters were set by mid-April. There was no way for the NWSL season to impact who was making the team. Here, we've still got, you know, I would say 7-8 games for each club that could help decide those bubble players.
Yeah, I don't think this roster is going to be set until July-ish. So April, May, June, that's a lot of time. It's a lot of games.
And so we had the second Columbia match today, 3-0 decision. You've got Julie Johnston with a brace, plus that nice goal to start things off from Kristen Press. Slightly different lineup. What did you think when you saw the lineup for this match?
I really wondered what purpose it served, because on the one hand, I do understand that Ellis wanted to experiment in, you know, a game situation where she said, okay, I want you guys to go out there and pretend you're a goal down, and then we're going to have Tobin pushing Kristen Press higher on the right side, like to kind of overwhelm the weak side and see what happens. But it really wasn't much of a test, because they were playing, you know, a tired Columbia team that was missing some crucial players. So how much of a test can that really be when the conditions aren't anything like what they would be in the Olympics? That team was going to press high all over the field no matter what. So I don't see how you can compare necessarily those results to, for example, Japan. When they play Japan in friendlies, that might be the time to test that scenario.
Right. I had some people ask me after Wednesday's game, they're like, wait a minute, I thought Colombia is going to the Olympics. Why don't they look better? And I had to explain, it's like, they haven't played an official match since, what, August? You know, some of them haven't been paid. They just got to Connecticut. You can see, you know, the big difference in how many other federations treat their teams. And the challenge it is, I think, for the U.S. to pull in a good opponent, especially when, you know, we know almost all the European teams were playing a Euro qualifier, you know, in this FIFA break. So it's not like they could get anybody from Europe. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, especially the second game where, okay, 7-0 blowout the other night, you know, you're not going to get a lot more competition in the second game, but at least it was a day game and it was warmer. I think Colombia was a little bit more rested and acclimated and up for the challenge. You know, so you had this chance for Jill Ellis to experiment, but I was very confused by the experiment.
I was too. I really was enthused at first to see her trying Pew, Press, and Dunn in a line in front, but I don't think the midfield really clicked, so that naturally hampered what the forwards were going to be able to do. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't really a three front, was it? I don't feel like it was. It didn't play out that way to me. I think she tried it and it didn't quite work out because, you know, Carly Lloyd had an off day, like she sometimes does, so that impacted things a little bit. And once again, the opposition wasn't necessarily what you'd want to use to calibrate anything.
Though I did feel, I was kind of excited watching Columbia's keeper. She had some nice moves, you know, for this game where you could see it's like, here's a keeper with potential that you wonder, it's like, you know, what if she got more training? You know, could take things to a higher level. I noticed that she's playing at the University of Miami, and I'm totally blanking on her name. Her last name is Perez.
Catalina Perez.
Yeah, that, hey, there's someone that, you know, it's like, could we see her in NWSL? If she's only getting college prep, you know, that's not going to do so much for Colombia in the Olympics.
No, but it would be nice to see her eventually. I don't necessarily know if she'd go directly to NWSL after college, even if she wanted to declare, but I think it would be cool to see her maybe do some time in Europe.
Right.
Especially where there's more of a market for goalkeepers as opposed to America, where, you know, there's 10 teams, 2 goalkeepers per team. and a lot of teams already are stocked up there. So it might be easier for her to break in Europe, get a year or two of seasoning, and then see if an American team or, you know, a big team in Germany or France might want to pick her up.
Right. Well, and last question for you about this game, and then we'll get on to a Boston Breakers preview. But thoughts on Ali Long, one, coming into this camp, two, getting the start and having a really strong performance Wednesday night, and then again, getting another 30 minutes today.
That is interesting. I didn't think it was going to really play out this way. I thought Ali Long was coming in. She hasn't been in since late 2014, I think, when Sarmani was still head coach, and this was Jill Ellis just saying, okay, here's a name that has kind of shuffled up to the top of my papers. I should probably take a look at her, because it's not like she has a recent strong NWSL performance to go off of. She got called in during preseason, unless Jill's looking at last season, in which case, why wouldn't she anyway?
No room in that victory tour.
Yeah. I really wasn't expecting it. I know a lot of Portland fans are pleased / dreading seeing Ali Long making an Olympic roster based on last game's performance. Portland's a team that has a lot of experience with people leaving them during big tournaments and then the rest of the team having to struggle because they made a lot of plans based on that roster. Even it's a little too soon to tell, but she could be moving towards bubble status as opposed to my previous evaluation, which was, oh, she's just in for Jill to see, you know, where she is at the moment.
Right. And I think bubble status is really key here because, sure, we had 23 players gone for the World Cup last summer, and the Olympic roster is 18, but it's 18 plus four alternates, and the alternates travel. So even if your NWSL player doesn't make the 18, but she makes the 22, she's still gone as if she made the 18.
Well, what I'm curious about is how Morgan Bryan's injury impacted midfield decisions.
Mm-hmm.
Because Morgan Bryan was out this whole time with hamstring injury and she had to return to the dash, as you all know, for, mm-hmm. for their evaluation. So if Morgan Bryan's healthy, Jill Ellis has seemed intent on seeing her working with Lindsay Horan back there. It's like two of them sitting in front of the back line and relying on Morgan Bryan to help not only break up defenses, but restart the attack. Because as we've seen from the stats, and there are stats now for the women's national team that are being gathered by, one of them is at WosoStats on Twitter. Morgan Bryan had some really nice stats coming out of She Believe, like passes completed and then passes completed under pressure.
Interesting.
So she, you know, quietly does the important things from midfield, it looks like.
And I was pleased to see that she got the golden ball in the CONCACAF tournament, because usually they tend to give it to someone who scored a lot of goals, even though you have the separate golden boot award. So having scored no goals, I'm glad that they actually saw the CONCACAF technical committee or whoever got to decide that, you know, saw that it's like the impact this player was having, those things that don't always lead up to the easy stats, but definitely have an effect on the entire game. So
yeah,
that's going to be interesting to see. But all right, so let's talk Boston Breakers. Season 4 for NWSL for Boston Breakers. And of course, we all know this is a club that goes back to the original WSA days. You know, same logo, same name, same colors. What always strikes me about Boston, especially as we've just been talking about Portland, is I look at this roster, and again, it's just one allocated player.
Mm-hmm.
As far as I can tell, one international player other than the allocation.
Yep.
So not going to be impacted very much by the Olympics.
No, and I spoke to Coach Matt Beard on Friday after their last preseason game against Boston College, and he basically confirmed he knows this is an Olympic year. He drafted with that in mind, and he made his trades with that in mind. So he's definitely prepared.
And he's new to the club, Tom Durkin moving on to work with the Boston Breakers Academy. So, of course, he's the first big change we should talk about. What's your feeling about Coach Beard, you know, as with preseason finished up and what you've seen with his comments and his draft picks and his trades?
I will say, so first, my first visceral reaction to him, like on a human gut level, is that I really, really like him as a coach and his style and how he interacts with the team from what I've seen. There's, you know, coaches who will yell at players and say, like, just do it this way. But what I've seen from Coach Beard is his approach is, step one, here's what I liked about what you did. Step two, here's what needs improving. Not necessarily what was wrong, what needs improving. Step three, here's how you do it and why. which I think is a fantastic approach for any coach to take, and maybe something this team might have needed given past seasons. Read into that what you will.
And that's great to hear, because even with successful teams, you don't always hear about a coach that really approaches it with such a positive angle.
Yeah. And then on a tactical level, he seems to be using players correctly, I guess you could say, plugging them in places where it makes sense and trying to get them used to each other and to him, emphasizing, he's constantly emphasizing movement. If you saw any of the preseason games, or if I guess you'll see him during the season, he's constantly emphasizing off the ball movement. He wants a fluid technical team that's able to move the ball around really quickly. So, you know, either they'll overload on one side and then switch the point of attack, or they're able to carry it up the middle with confidence, stuff like that. It's really nice to see.
When I know he's known for, you know, when he took over Liverpool Ladies, he made huge changes, and he's made some changes here, but still, when I look at this roster, I see a lot of names very familiar to me, you know, that I associate with Boston, you know, McCaffrey, Kalman from last year, Rachel Wood, Verdoya, Schepfer, you know, so it's not a complete roster change, but I'd say, of course, we could talk about the big trade of Alyssa Nair to Chicago in exchange for Whitney Engen, who at Western New York Flash had sent to Chicago. And of course, Whitney Engen having played for Matt Beard at Liverpool Ladies, you know, that's a player he knows well, a player to kind of, you know, I guess he's starting from the back of the spine and building up from there. And then, of course, bringing over goalkeeper Libby Stout, who had also played for him at Liverpool. So how do you feel he's mixing the new players with that core that remains from the Breakers 2015 roster?
Well, interestingly, I haven't gotten to see much of Libby Stout. The way preseason worked out was the Breakers were in Florida for a week, and a lot of her playing time was down there. And unfortunately, I'm not the kind of journalist that gets to travel with the team.
Not yet, anyway.
I don't think there's that kind of money yet in women's soccer reporting. Libby Stout's no slouch.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like the FAWSL was some kind of beer league. It's pretty competitive, and she's got some top level experience. And I also got to see Abby Smith play. I think the most I've seen actually of his new hires is Whitney Engen, and I think she's integrated pretty well into the back line so far. I saw her from the very first preseason game at Northeastern. She was very vocal. She was coordinating things between her and Cassie Coleman, who comes with us from last season and was really the anchor of the back line from last year, and was also teaching Kristen Westfall, who's one of the rookies we drafted. Coleman has more of a hand right now in teaching Westfall. They're just partnered together on that side more frequently. But Engen was coordinating with the team and also taking instruction from Coach Beard and relaying it to everybody. So that communication corridor seems to me at least to be working and to be open.
And she seems like a natural leader, especially being a center back. You're going to have to be a leader. And, you know, the brief time that she had with the Houston Dash in 2014, I mean, Houston fans saw how she really shored up that defense. You know, it's just a shame that there were other call-ups and how long it took her and Megan Klingenberg to get here. And I'm still surprised that she's not given more of a look you know, with the U.S. national team, that it seems like, you know, Sonnet's got the edge over her. So, you know, it's still unknown if she's going to, you know, again, make that 18 or maybe the 22 for the Olympics. But let's talk about Kristen Westfall, because that was the top pick for the Boston Breakers, you know, in the draft, and mm-hmm. she's been signed. What do you see in Kristen Westfall that really makes you excited that she's on the Boston team?
Well, I don't want to go too far too soon and say excited, not to insult Kristen Westfall, who's delightful, but I will say I'm cautiously optimistic, especially seeing her progress from first preseason game to last preseason game. Mm-hmm. It's only been a couple weeks, but she seems to be getting her legs under her and working with vets like Cassie Coleman, and I guess to some extent Rachel Wood is helping. Like in that first Northeastern game, I think I'm not sure how much of it was inexperience at this level and how much of it was just needing to click with a brand new starting 11, but her positioning was a little bit off. And there was one snafu where she just didn't communicate with Coleman and they collided on a header.
Ouch.
Like, yeah, they were both trying to grab this ball. I guess didn't see each other you know, went right into each other. It was embarrassing. But that's stuff you work out in preseason. That's what happens to you when you're a rookie. That's why you work with veterans. So over the course of some games, practices, by the time she got to this last game versus Boston College, I think positioning was a little better. Communication was a little better. She's a little more confident in herself. And yeah, she got a lot of time. So I think Beard clearly plans for Westfall to be an integral part of his starting 11. I think we can expect to see her starting on the back line, barring, you know, something weird happening in practice. And I think she'll grow into the role.
Yeah, I remember just how excited everyone was when she got drafted, and kind of like that was a name buzzing around, you know, for that first round, and just like to see who was going to get her. So it's interesting, I think, that Matt Beard chose defense over offense, you know, for the first pick. But I think, like, you know, with getting Engen from Chicago, he's building from the back, and like, let's shore up the D and move forward.
Yeah, I think he had it in mind that he was going to be retooling his midfield through trades. So at the draft, he focused defensively. He picked up Westfall, goalkeeper, and Brittany Radcliffe in the midfield. And I think he figured between Mewis and McCaffrey, and he'd have Simon for part of the year, and then whoever he was going to trade for in the midfield, he would retool the offense that way.
And of course, you know, speaking of that midfield, those trades, picking up Sinead Farley, McCall Zerboni, Angela Salem, what do you think those three NWSL veterans bring to the table?
Well, I think first we need to know that Sinead Farley has not played with the Breakers yet. She hasn't been cleared medically, mm-hmm. and I haven't really gotten too much out of the team on that so far. So I think they're just kind of keeping an eye on some kind of nagging injury, but they don't want to talk about it too much.
Right.
She has been with the team. I saw her at the games and stuff and at practice. So she's around. It's probably just she's not totally 100%, and they're being cautious. They don't want to strain her before the season starts, which leaves Zerboni and Salem developing a midfield partnership, which is turning out okay. McCall Zerboni is going to be the linchpin for this team in this season. I think that's going to turn out to be the case.
She seems to be that crucial utility player that keeps getting traded around because she's so useful.
Yeah, the way she's being used right now, she's not just getting stuck in midfield and like controlling the tempo, but she's also picking out forwards on a lot of runs. She's making a lot of very decisive passes to catch people on the run into the box, stuff like that. She's really, you know, a two-way midfielder here, doing the hard defensive work, but also being expected to be connective throughout the midfield, whether it's to the forwards or whether it's working with Angela Salem, who I think is going to be her partner for the beginning of the season.
And then, you know, ahead of the midfielders, of course, we've got, you know, the forwards. Tell me how Steffi McCaffrey's been looking. You know, she got her first goal with the U.S. national team in the fall. I know she was called up earlier in the year, but didn't really, you know, break in to see any time. I've got to think that time with the national team has really built her confidence and maybe given her something to strive for.
Yeah, I think what I've seen is Beard's not going to force her to slot into a role other than the one that she's very comfortable in, which is she goes, you know, end line on the flank, very Heather O'Reilly-esque. She's good at taking on 1v1, creating a lot of havoc, maybe pulling some defenders out of the box, and then either sending in a cross, centering the ball, or taking the shot herself. Maybe her time at the national team, what happened there was it made her, A, more confident in taking the shot herself, although I don't think Steffi McCaffrey really suffers from a lack of confidence, and B, maybe picking up her head a little more and seeing where the pass should go. But I think we can expect to see more of the same from her from last year, but a little more refined, a little more explosive.
Well, and I have to bring it up. I know it's been a very challenging three seasons for Boston Breakers fans, you know, and I would think, you know, like you said, the visceral reaction to Tom Beard being hired, you know, it's like he seems like a great coach, but just that a coaching change was made and changes are being made. I mean, do these changes give you a good feeling? Yes.
Yes, they definitely do. I mean, it really sucked losing Nayer. That was like a gut punch emotional thing. But as much as I hate to admit it, I think the logic behind it is pretty sound. the only reason Neyer had to be such a giant for the Breakers the past couple of seasons is because there were some deficiencies in the back line in front of her. So once you fix that, it doesn't become as necessary, as crucial to have a Neyer back there. You can bring in somebody who, I don't want to say make do with, but someone who I don't trust yet, like Libby Stout. She's got plenty of time to prove herself, and I'm really looking forward to seeing it. You know, you get attached to your favorites. Definitely.
Which is why you're so excited that Alyssa Nair got a cap today against Columbia.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, I'll follow Alyssa Nair anywhere in her career. I mean,
well, and also, you know, as someone who's been following women's soccer for a really long time, you know, talk about what it feels like where we're going into the fourth season for NWSL. And here's this club that was 3 seasons in WSA, 3 seasons WPS, also WPSL Elite, fourth season NWSL.
I know. It's all uncharted territory from here. Although it shouldn't be uncharted for NWSL leadership, I hope. I really hope that they're working on putting together some more sponsorships. We've seen some big names come on team by team, like Seattle announcing they got Microsoft as their jersey sponsor, which I think is huge.
Yes.
Huge. But I really want to see more sponsors in addition to the National Mango Board for NWSL. And I want to see, you know, increased TV time, a better TV deal. I want to see increased standards for live streams. You know, eventually I want to see a players union, stuff like that.
And I feel like, you know, even if we don't get a better TV deal, I feel like there's so much that can be done with those live streams.
It still
surprises me that, you know, even the Mango Board and Nike don't automatically have an ad in every single live stream, every single game. I mean, I know for the Dash, we've thrown in that Nike ad just because we have it, and it's, you know, I don't know if it's still going to run this year, but, you know, it was from pre-2014 World Cup. You know, we've been running the same BBVA Compass Bank ad, you know, forever because we have those ads, but I don't understand why, when the league has the metrics of how many people are watching these streams, and they're from all over the world, and how much they're watching. You know, they're not logging on and logging off. They're logging on and staying, and they're going back and rewatching. It's like, why isn't somebody really taking advantage of this? So that's why I feel like, you know, I agree with you where it's like, some more sponsorships, please. We know the money's there, but no one seems to be going out and getting it.
I will say, in team's defense, a lot of them seem to have community sponsors. They'll go in and get a regional sponsor and throw in an ad for, you know, a local bank or whatever in their live streams, which is, I think, really neat. I like to see clubs tie themselves into the community really deeply on a grassroots level.
Right.
Because, you know, nationally, it's hard to elbow your way into the conversation, so start where you have room.
Right.
Which is, you know, locally.
Yeah, I guess my beef isn't with the club. My beef is with the league, where it's have these sponsors help everyone monetize their streams. It's not free to put these things together, you know, and like you said, you want higher standards. So, yeah, let's get the support for higher standards. But anyway, Steph, thank you so much for sharing your thoughts about Boston and, of course, the U.S. Women's National Team game today. Any last thoughts about Breakers for 2016?
I think we're not going to be last this season, and that's all I can ask for.
That's a great way to say it. Well, I'm sure I'll be talking to you later in the season, and I'm sure Boston Breakers won't be last when we talk.
Oh, thanks, Jen. You're an optimist.
All right, Jen Cooper, the Keeper, here with Courtney Andros from WOSO Off the Post and also from FinalThirdSoccer.com. Courtney, thanks for joining me today.
No problem.
You have the honor of being the person that's going to tell me all about the Western New York Flash roster for 2016. We're lucky that the roster has been released, so we can actually talk pretty intelligently about the roster. But of course, it's exactly 20 players right now. Not all of the rosters out there completely filled, but you had said before we started that there might be a new signing for the Flash.
Yeah, Rich Randall, in a radio show, I don't know if it was today he was actually on, but he was on the radio, might have been today, might have been very recently, talking about that they have another, what he called, to describe to be a big signing that's about to be announced or take place, which is interesting because, like you said, they are 20 out of 20 right now. So Obviously, we'll talk about the roster that we have, but, you know, obviously if they do make that signing, somebody's going to have to, you know, go in order to make room for said person. It's going to be interesting. I almost wonder if it's not another international, because they do have some international slots open at the moment, that one that they just acquired. So I'm really interested by who might be coming in.
Well, and so that's our explanation. If somebody we talk about ends up not being on the roster tomorrow or the next day, that there's 20 spaces, they're full right now. We know there's a signing to come, so one of these people is going to be moving on. But let's start from the back. Let's talk about the goalkeeping situation for the Flash. You've got Sabrina D'Angelo, one of the Canadian keepers, and also you've got NCAA champion, you know, the Penn State captain, Britt Eckerstrom. You know, so I think you've got an interesting mix of a somewhat of a veteran, I wouldn't say full on capital V veteran of the league, right, Sabrina D'Angelo, and a rookie, but a rookie who's, you know, had a really great senior season.
Yeah, I think the goalkeeping is going to be interesting to watch. Obviously, you know, I would say D'Angelo is going to come into the season being the starter. She was the veteran, is the veteran on the team as far as goalkeeping goes. But you never know what could happen. It was kind of an interesting situation last season where they assigned Chantel Jones, thinking, like, a lot of us thought she was going to be the starting goalkeeper. Right. Got injured in preseason. D'Angelo was amazing and kind of took over. She started as the starting goalkeeper in the season, and then unfortunately she was injured, so which allowed Jones to come back. But you never know what could happen with goalkeepers. It just shows that, you know, just because you assume someone's going to be the starter, you never know, you know, what's going to happen. I'm unfamiliar with if Eckerstrom saw time in preseason in any of the matches. They only had one full preseason match and then a couple, like, a half matches, essentially. But you never know. But D'Angelo is a great person to have there. She's been seeing more time with the Canada national team, saw some time in the Algarve in the final, I believe, also. So it just kind of shows, you know, John Herdman is obviously see something in her that is quality, and she did really well when she's been, you know, getting called up for Canada. So she, before she was injured last season, was incredibly solid and unfortunately missed a lot of games because of that. And then when she was back, even Jones had been doing so well. But she's a really solid player. I think that, you know, we didn't get to see a lot of what she could do last season, but I think we're going to be able to see a lot more of that this year. So it's really exciting that she's going to be back. And then Eckerstrom, like, you know, you kind of mentioned it, you know, national champion with Penn State, another solid. She had 15 shutouts, you know, in her season, senior season. So that's, you know, really incredible to have, you know, two goalkeepers who, you know, are quality goalkeepers and could get the job done.
Though it's interesting when you talk about not having, you know, much real preseason competition, you know, unlike, you know, the Dash in Portland and Seattle, that having that formal tournament, you know, in Portland, mm-hmm. you know, that I would think hurts Britt a little bit to have that real game feeling, you know, leading up to the season kicking off. You know, it's like you need that experience, even though you're coming off of, you know, a great senior season and a national championship. It's like it is a step up, and you want to get that simulation time as much as possible.
Yeah, it wasn't kind of unfortunate for the team as a whole. They played West Virginia a full preseason game, and then they had a game scheduled. I want to say it was against Penn State. I'm not entirely sure, though. But then something happened with it fell through. So they kind of ended up, they played Syracuse and Vermont, but just essentially like a half a game each. So still not really necessary. Like as a whole, like last season, they had three full preseason games. And just the team as a whole only kind of having one full game and then those kind of half games against different people. It's going to be interesting to see kind of how the players have developed as a whole in general, just because they didn't have a lot of they probably had the least preseason action of, you know, any team that's in the league potentially.
Right. Well, let's talk about the defense that will be in front of either Sabrina or Britt. You've got the two Abbeys. You've got Abby Dahlkemper coming back for her sophomore season in the league. Abby Erceg, you know, acquired via trade from Chicago Red Stars, you know, veteran defender, you know, longtime leader for New Zealand. Mm-hmm. Though of course she'll be gone, you know, for the Olympics. Jaylene Hinkle, who, you know, since the last season ended, we've seen her get a fair amount of time with the U.S. national team, at least last fall, not mm-hmm. necessarily recently. And then Courtney Nemec, another veteran of the league, and Alana Kennedy from Australia. I don't know her as well. Do you think, is she in the pool to go to the Olympics for Australia?
I believe so. I believe that she is. I know she was gone for, she participated in Olympic qualification for Australia. So, I would imagine she'd still be in the pool for them. So she would potentially, well, not potentially, she would likely be missing time as well for Australia. But in general, like it's, I know it's, there's only five defenders listed, which I know some people are kind of like, oh gosh, like what is happening? You know, they have some flexibility, which we'll talk about in a second, but I think all the defenders there are extremely solid. Like you said, you know, Erceg for Chicago was kind of in and out, so it was kind of hard to get a gauge there. But, you know, consistently for New Zealand is, you know, has been really solid and is really, you know, incredible back there. Like I said, Kennedy, I don't really know that much about her either. I do know that she is someone who, you know, people were very excited about having, so she'll actually provide a lot of stability back there as well. And the good thing about Abby Dalkemper this year, she kind of last year played kind of in various positions. She was in the midfield for a little while, mostly, but Paul Riley did say that he's going to have her back to being in the center back position, which is where I think she's strongest. So just having her in that position where she excels the most is going to definitely help the flash in the back line in general. And then Courtney Niemiec, not entirely familiar with, I know she played for the Thorns, but a couple seasons ago, and you know, from what I remember of her, was another just solid defender. And like you said about Hinkle getting experience with the national team, again, not so much recently, but just in general, it can only really help just being able to play with a quality team with the national team players and get that experience against those teams. It really can only help.
Yeah, when you think of her off season, that unlike a lot of these players, she was playing, you know, Brazil and China and,
exactly.
You know, and training against, you know, players from the best team in the world. It's like, that's got to be a great way to come into camp and probably raise her level as someone who can be a leader on the field and also in the locker room. I would think the biggest challenge for this defense and probably this whole roster is the players coming in and out for the Olympics, though there's still a lot of question marks. Of course, Hinkle at this point, she hasn't seen time for the US for the while, probably not even going to be, you know, in the 22. You know, of course, that won't be decided till late June, but you know, you've got Erceg. I mean, she has to go with New Zealand. She's the captain. Kennedy maybe for Australia. And then moving on to the midfielders, you've got Lady Andrade with Colombia, Samantha Mewis, who's been looking good for the USA.
Yes.
The other two internationals in the midfielder, their countries aren't going to the Olympics, so at least they'll be staying home. Halamatu Ayinde from Nigeria and John Gayul from Korea. Now, let's talk first about John Gayul. I don't know if you've had a chance to see her play much, but just the fact that we've signed a Korean international to NWSL, you know, that's a great flag post for the league of like, hey, players from this country are kind of looking at the league and going, hey, maybe I want to go over there, even if it means I'm paid a little bit less. You've got the experience of being in the US.
Oh, absolutely. I think that just the fact that the league can draw, you know, we have people from different countries that we had the last couple of seasons have had people in the league, but just the fact that that's extending out is even more incredible. I haven't been able to see her play, but I do have some friends that went to the first preseason game and they were really excited about her, what she's going to do this season. They said that she had she looked really solid in preseason. And they were really impressed with what they saw from her during that one actually full game that they had. So they're really excited about her, which I think a lot of us are. And just again, it's another quality player. I think even in the World Cup last year, she had a solid World Cup. She helped, you know, South Korea get further than people thought that they would get. So that itself is incredible, you know, and I think that just shows how the sport over there is kind of growing too on an international level. So to be able to have somebody who has played such a role on that team, on the South Korea team internationally, want to come over and play in NWSL, I think is excellent. And she should be really fun to watch this season.
Especially when she's coming from the WK League, which is a really well-organized league. Mm-hmm. Again, to make the point that she's willing to make the jump over here for potentially less money, you know, just says, hey, there's something that this league offers. And I bet if she has a good experience, then we could see more players from the South Korean national team, that is, you know, come over to NWSL. Also in the midfield, not international players, we've got Elizabeth Eddy, you know, returning player, and Michaela Hahn, you know, draft pick. Any thoughts on Michaela? Again, you know, coming in as a rookie. Last year seemed to be all about rookies for Western New York Flash. And I remember talking to Randy Waldron about them, and he said, the good thing about that is they don't know what they don't know, so they're playing as if they're all pros. You know, so they started with a good kind of vibe. But here, now you actually have the bulk of this team actually is experienced. You know, so maybe that's something that can help Michaela Hahn as a rookie, just like, all right, I've got all these leaders around me.
Yeah, there's a lot of new faces on the Flash, but a lot of them are players that have experience.
Right.
And I think that you're right, exactly what you said, that could certainly help some of the rookie players. And, you know, she, you know, had a really good career at Florida State and was just a very solid, you know, individual for that team. So especially looking at the midfield and who she's, you know, would be playing with, I think there's a lot of strong individuals in there. And I think that that's only going to help elevate her game. And kind of like you said, they don't really know, you know, when you're rookies, they don't really know. They just play like they have to, because, you know, everybody, obviously you want to get time, you want to be able to contribute to the team. So they definitely have a group of people to learn from that is really solid. You mentioned Elizabeth Eddy also, who can play pretty much anywhere. I have a feeling we might actually see her on the back line occasionally or quite a bit. She was there during preseason and there is such few defenders, but anywhere you put her, she has an impact. And even if she's, you know, on the back line, she is a very solid attacking player and will run down the flanks. And it's just, they all have really good work ethics that will not only help the team, but will also help the youngsters on the team be able to kind of really see like what it means to be a professional and kind of help bring their game to that level of the NWSL.
And then, of course, you know, in midfield, as we mentioned, Samantha Mewis, who, you know, very strong rookie season, nominated for NWSL Rookie of the Year, now seeing regular time with the national team, you know, and she had the game-winning goal in the match against Germany last month in the She Believes Cup. You know, I would imagine she's going to be gone for the Olympics, whether she's in the 18 or the 22, you know, she's gone. Mm-hmm. But I feel like when she's with the Flash, she's going to have even more of an impact, you know, than she did last season.
Oh, absolutely. There was kind of, especially the midfield, there are people who, like, with Ayinde there and, you know, Andrade was only there for a little while, but, you know, they have played before with Eddie also. There's a lot more kind of return to the Flash in the midfield. And she's been someone who I couldn't be more excited when she, you know, the action she's been seeing with the national team. You know, and I think that she's just, her confidence has just improved even more, you know, from each game she's played with the national team. So I think that that's really something that she's going to be able to bring back. And yeah, even if she is gone, you know, like you said, either in the 18 or 22 for the Olympics, I think that while she is with the Flash, she definitely is going to have a big impact. Like I said, you said she had a great rookie season. And I think the time with the national team has only helped. And that the action and kind of the team she's been playing against can only help strengthen her game and confidence. And I definitely think we'll see that with the Flash this year.
And then looking at the forwards, right now, 7 forwards on the roster. Of course, 2 of them were non-draftees. They're listed on the roster. I don't know if that means that they're signed with the league or not. I would think it would have to mean that they're signed. But of course, as we mentioned previously, you know, someone is going to come off this roster since the Flash have been teasing a new signing. So let's talk about those 2 non-drafted players in camp first. Taylor Smith from UCLA. Catherine Zimmerman from Providence College. You know, have you seen much from them? I mean, it's like, to me, first, when I look at this list, I'm like, 7 forwards?
Yeah, that's, and honestly, if I had to make a prediction, which I'm probably will be wrong with, because that's just kind of how things work, but I would imagine one of the forwards would be a person who would go when, you know, needing to make roster room, but you never know what's going to happen, so I guess we'll see. But I'm just looking at who's left at the other positions. That would be my guess, but honestly, don't know much about Taylor Smith, and I haven't really heard a lot about her throughout preseason. I'm kind of in the dark there about her, but interesting to see kind of what she's all about. The other one being Catherine Zimmerman, and again, didn't really know much about her. She played at Providence College, but she actually did see some time in preseason, scored a couple goals in some of the preseason, you know, kind of competition that they had. So you know, obviously it was enough to, you know, get her a spot on the team, at least for now. Again, we don't know what's going to happen when a new signing comes in, but from what I understand, just from kind of reading the notes over from preseason games, she looked pretty solid.
Yeah, and then your other five, other than these two, you know, non-drafted rookies, however we want to call them.
Right.
Of course, you've got a big draft pick, Mackenzie Doniak, who a lot of people thought were going to go in first round, but the Flash picked her up second round. Of course, returnee Christian Hamilton, Adriana Leon from Canada, picked up from Chicago. Jess McDonald, who started at Houston and got traded to the Flash through a trade with Kansas City.
Correct.
And then, of course, returnee Lynn Williams, who was drafted last year out of Pepperdine, had four goals on the season. So that's such an interesting mix of forwards.
I mean, it really is.
I mean, if your coach, which three did the three of those do you pick for opening day?
Oh man, Lynn Williams definitely. Lynn Williams is someone who, even though the Flash in general had a hard time scoring goals last season, period, like across the board, just of all the chances they had a hard time scoring goals. But Lynn Williams is someone who I would just was constantly impressed with last season, and she missed a chunk of the end of the season because she had a knee injury and had to have surgery. But from what I understand, she's been coming back, you know, very well from that and has had a great preseason. She's someone who is just so fast. So fast, and I think last season some of the issues maybe with her were confidence issues, and I think that that's going to be better this season. So I definitely would say Lynn Williams. See, and this is it's hard because this is just me going off of players that I like. Whether they will combine like appropriately is going to be it.
That's fine, you know, because none of us really have a very accurate looking glass. Yeah, and one of the things that I find so fascinating about this league is that there are so many unknowns, which I think it makes it more interesting to watch.
Absolutely. And I was going to say, I'd say Jess McDonald also, just because I think one of the players that, and I'm not saying that it's a even swap, but I think a lot, one of the players that people were sad to see go was Michelle Heyman in the offseason, just because she provided a lot of height and was kind of more aggressive in the air and just in general. And I think that the Flash could really use someone like Jess McDonald, who also has been known to get her head on the ball and just can kind of like, she has a lot of different qualities, you know, size, skill, you know, we've seen her score goals, and I'm sure, obviously, from Houston, you know, I'm sure you know a lot about Jess McDonald, but
right.
I think she's someone that the Flash are kind of lacking. We're kind of lacking a player like her, and there were a lot of times last season where I was like, man, like, we could use this, and I was thrilled when I found out that the Flash, she was acquired in a trade, just because I think that the Flash could really use something like that, someone like her.
She's such a hungry player. And
that
too. I think that's what you're describing, where it's like,
yes,
I want the ball, I want to score, I'll put the game on my shoulders.
Yes.
You know, what can I do? And I'm glad you brought up Michelle Heyman's height, because I didn't realize how tall she was until watching the US-Australia match last summer, and they were lining up for the anthems, and I can't remember who she was standing next to in the Australia lineup, but they were really short. I was like, it's like, I knew Michelle Heyman. I was like, yeah, she is really tall. And it's like, it's easy to say, yeah, you want tall athletes, but I think we forget that in women's soccer, most of your players out there are like 5'5", 5'6". So even a 5'8", 5'9" player, where you wouldn't think, oh, that's a really tall person, it's like, no, that's an advantage. So yeah, I think Michelle's 5'10", so that's, you know, losing that height, but like I said, getting it in Jessica McDonald, that's you definitely want that point person up top that you can, you know, just get the ball to her and she'll head it in.
Absolutely. And then I guess if I had to pick a third person, I would say, again, just based on kind of what I've, you know, seen in preseason and just my thoughts about this player, I'd say Adriana Leon, honestly, because I think that, I don't know, part of me feels like, you know, she's a Federation player, they're calling it, from Canada, but she's not technically with Canada. She's been called up recently.
Right.
Like that. And so part of me almost thinks that she will have a hunger also to prove that she is still like a useful player and a player who can get the job done and who will score goals and make things happen. So I think that we'll see that from her. She has a lot of skill also. So, I mean, just experience also, you know, I'm not trying to go with some experience here as well, you know, just to kind of see, you want to start off strong. So I had to pick the people to start for opening day up top. That would be the three. Again, who knows, based on like chemistry, we don't really get to see all that as far as like, you know, how they've been gelling together as either like a front line or a team in general, especially with the little preseason activity they actually had. But I think all three of those players bring something to the table, as do the others. But again, when you have 7 forwards listed, it's very hard to kind of go through them all and, you know, figure out like who's going to be the most effective at this time.
And of course, it depends on your opponent, who that new signing is. You know, mm-hmm. and then I look at someone like Mackenzie Donnyak and think it's like, well, you could probably use her in midfield too, if you needed to. So lots of options there. It seems like a much different story for the Flash than where we were a year ago, where it seemed like they were using the draft to completely seed their team.
Well, they were,
you know,
essentially last year they had so many draft picks and they signed them all. This year we saw one, Laura Lytle was not signed and Mallory Weber was traded. So, they really were not relying so heavily on the draft this year. They lost so many players, but have brought them in not just with new individuals as rookies, but they've brought them in, they've replaced them with players who have a variety of experience, either NWSL experience, NWSL and international experience. So it's sad to lose a lot of the players that we lost. However, the fact that there's new faces, but not new professionals, is something that I think is really going to help the Flash this year.
Well, let's talk about new coach. Of course, it's not a new to NWSL coach. It's Paul Riley, who of course has coached also in WPS, you know, came off of the last two seasons with the Thorns. What do you think he's bringing to the table here?
I think that he, when he has a team, from what I understand about Paul Riley, when he has a team that he can kind of build up himself and have like those new players start with him from the beginning, he's had a lot of success in that area. And there's not necessarily, you know, I know there were some issues in Portland, but Portland also had, you know, so many big name players, which doesn't necessarily always mean they're going to work well together. But I think when you have a team like the Flash now, where there's a lot of new faces, and you know that some of the returning players have only played one season, essentially, that he can kind of take that team and kind of build it the way he wants to build it. And I think that there's not necessarily any huge names on the Flash, so I think that there may be more, sometimes even more chemistry because of that.
Right.
That's where he really, again, my understanding of Paul Riley, really excels with, you know, I know when he was in Philadelphia, he kind of had that same being able to kind of build a team.
Right. They did,
from
they did,
bottom up.
They didn't have any flashy names. Like it was, I feel like his work at Philadelphia was part of what created Amy Rodriguez.
Absolutely.
You know, cause she, so her first season in WPS, she was with Boston Breakers. She, you know, she's a number one draft pick, you know, not a good fit for her there, you know, so much better in Philadelphia.
I mean, I'm not going to lie, when I, just from observations of the Thorns, just this knee-jerk reaction when I found out they announced him as the coach, I was kind of like, oh gosh, just because, you know, Portland kind of, you know, had a lot of struggles and there were a lot of things people were saying about Portland and, you know, Paul Riley's time there. But, and then I kind of let the rational part of my brain really think about it and think, you know, he's also has coached on the East Coast for a number of years, and that's, you know, the East Coast is maybe more comfortable for him as well, even though, you know, the Buffalo right. is very different, that, but still, you know, I just think he might feel more comfortable just being here also. And I think that will, you know, show through as well. And, you know, the more that I've really like sat and thought about it, like, I think that it's, I think he just brings something new and fresh too. Like, I think the players are, he's only the second coach in Western New York Flash history. So it's, you know, sometimes you just need something fresh, like a new perspective, a new style, a new management style to kind of kickstart a team. And with having so many new players this year, I really think that it may actually just benefit them all the way around.
And that's a really good point because, you know, Aaron Lyons has been the coach when it was what, WPSL, WPSL, yes. WPSL Elite, then you know, the first few seasons of NWSL. So, you know, clearly the club struggling the last couple of years, a lot of overhaul of rosters. But so just like, you know, changing up the roster a lot can give you a fresh start, bringing in a leader at the top, you know, especially one who has, you know, taken teams to championship games, you know, that's a great leader to bring in. So it's going to be interesting to see, I think, I would say the Flash is one of the most unknowns to me. As like, I don't have a good sense of where they're going to fall this year, just because it's such a changed club, you know. Like
it is.
Like Houston's easier for me to read. Obviously, I'm here. It's a change club. Mm-hmm. But we're seeing the pieces come together. They've had a lot of preseason matches. Here, you haven't had as many preseason matches. Mm-hmm. It's a completely different coach. So there's probably still changes that he wants to, you know, affect that haven't been worked out yet. And then, of course, as you mentioned, that there's a signing coming. So it's still this work in progress. But I think it's going to be fascinating to watch.
I think it's going to be fascinating. I think that, you know, of course, sometimes with change, myself included, people are kind of like, oh gosh, like they had all this change last year and it was a terrible season, and now they have all this change this year and it's going to be another terrible season. But I honestly think that, like, just from, again, I haven't been able to be at any of, you know, they have had such few preseason opportunities, I haven't been able to actually see the team and things like that. But I don't know, I just get kind of a general feel that, you know, things are looking up. And I, again, like we kind of talked about the fact that they've brought in so many experienced players, even though they're new to the Flash, and haven't just relied on the draft to kind of overhaul their team and rebuild their team. I think that it's a positive sign. They are a really young team, though. Right before we started talking, I saw on Twitter someone had posted that the average age of the Flash roster was, I think, 20 or something like that.
Wow.
And Jess McDonald is the oldest at 28. So
yeah,
it's still a very, young, average age young team. However, I think that they're going to be better off. Again, we have to kind of see how everything, I lied, 22, almost 23, not 20, but still a very young team. But I think the fact that there is so much experience, it's not all relying on the draft, I think, is going to be beneficial for them in the long run. And hopefully we'll see some of that pay out this season as well.
Well, and I think it's important for fans, especially newer fans, to realize that if you're going to follow a sports team, there's always going to be change. We mm-hmm. may not like it, but it's the nature of the beast that, you know, you're always going to have players retire, or the coach has to trade, or there's mm-hmm. an injury that requires a trade, or, you know, these are very small rosters with a very small salary cap. It's just, it's how it falls. But the good thing is, like, usually wherever your favorite player ends up going, you know, you can still kind of support them too.
Absolutely. I know I have people who support several different teams just because that's where their favorite players are, or they'll at least watch. I mean, they're not like a supporter of that team, but they'll at least watch the games because they want to see their player. And so, I mean, any kind of exposure that people will check out multiple teams, I think, is not necessarily a bad thing either. You're going to watch more games than just, you know, the one that your quote-unquote home team is, so.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and it, like, for me, with the WSA and WPS eras, I didn't have a team anywhere near me. So WSA, I started off rooting for the Cyber Rays because that's where my sister lived, and then kind of got enamored with the Atlanta Beat and went to some of their games. And, you know, so it's kind of funny. It's like, I think it's something so specific to women's soccer where we're happy to support multiple teams, even if they're in the same league, you know, and in some ways it's also a little bit more player driven, you know. Like I was talking to a friend of mine from Chicago today, and she was amused that they seemed more upset that Ashlyn Harris was no longer the number two for the U.S. Mm-hmm. than that Nair, who is now their own keeper, is now the number two.
Right.
Because, like, in their heads, they haven't really embraced Nair as Chicago yet. Whereas, like, the Boston right. fans, who no longer have Alyssa Nair, are like, yes, our keeper is, you know.
Yes.
Is it? But they're exactly. like, wait, but she's not our keeper. But she'll always be our keeper. But, yeah, it's one of the things to me that makes following women's soccer so special. But Courtney, anyway, thank you so much for taking the time to share your insight about Western New York Flash. And, you know, I'm hoping they'll have a very exciting season.
Me too.
All right, time to wrap things up with the back four. So first and foremost, opening day weekend, this weekend for the NWSL. Yes, it's happening. The NWSL kicks off its fourth season with a record 10 teams this Saturday. You got 3 matches on Saturday, 2 on Sunday, and all will stream live on YouTube. Saturday's matches are Boston at Washington, 6 p.m. CT, Chicago at Houston, 7:30 p.m. CT, Central Time that is, and Western New York Flash at Kansas City, 7:30 p.m. Central Time.
Then Sunday's games are Sky Blue at Seattle, 6 p.m., followed by Expansion Club Orlando at Portland, 9 p.m. All games on YouTube, all those times for Central Time. Next, if you're addicted to WOSO gear like I am, you know how hard it is to find NWSL gear, and in some cases, U.S. national team gear. So I'm doing what I can through the soccer store I manage to make more gear available. So check out my post on keepernotes.com to see what training gear is available for NWSL teams. And I hope to have more info next week once we see what game day jerseys each team will be wearing for 2016. Next, this Thursday, before the NWSL season starts, we've got the official draw for the 2016 Olympics. It'll be held Thursday in Rio at 8:30 a.m. Central Time, 10:30 Rio time, and I think that's like 3:30 Europe time. Note, I don't know yet if there's going to be a live stream. If I find one, definitely share it via Keeper Notes. But either way, as soon as we know the groups and the schedule, Hal Kaiser and I will post something on keepernotes.com. There are four pots of three teams each, organized by the most recent FIFA World Rankings, and teams will be drawn into three groups of four teams. The only restriction is that teams cannot be drawn into a group with another team from the same confederation. So USA can't be with Canada, Brazil can't be with Colombia, Germany can't be with Sweden and France, Australia can't be drawn with China, and Brazil automatically goes in the A1 slot. That's traditional for the host team. Next, my new poster. Funny story. I got so excited when Allie Long scored her first U.S. national team goal last Wednesday that I quickly checked my U.S. national team database to see, okay, you know, how many total players have scored a goal for the USA, and I looked a little too quickly. So I thought that Allie Long was number 100, but it turns out she's actually number 101. You know, we don't want to exclude anybody. So yeah, that one actually got past the keeper. But either way, I went ahead and created a typographic poster honoring these 101 women, and you can purchase it framed or unframed in a variety of sizes from society6.com. That is the number 6. Just search for USWNT. And speaking of things you can buy, I will have a pre-order link up this week for the NWSL Almanac. The entire thing should be ready to download by May 1st. And this will be the first ever American WOSA Pro Almanac of its kind. All right, thanks to everyone for listening. Don't forget you can subscribe via iTunes. You can also find us on Stitcher, Podomatic, and HowlerMagazine.com. Just click on podcast. Of course, always thanks to Howler for their support, and thanks to PK Ray for making this podcast possible.